Like I said, we're finishing the book of Judges today. Judges has been a pretty jacked up book as it is. What the book is about is it's really about the failure of Israel to follow God. They continuously have gone through times of idolatry in this book. They've gone into captivity multiple times, and God has raised up different judges to help liberate the people out of this type of bondage. And we've gone through these different successive judges. Each judge has been worse than the last. The last one that we went over was Samson. Tom went over that one. And Samson was the worst judge that they ever had. He was also the sweetest judge they ever had, if we're real. But no, he was definitely the worst judge that they ever had. He had all the gifts that God could have possibly given him, and he used them for his own pride and his own ego. And he ended up slipping into sin, and he ended up failing to deliver the people of Israel from the Philistines. He did strike a pretty critical blow against them, but he never delivered them. He never delivered them from the Philistines. So his story becomes just like a tragic one. After Judges 16, the last chapters of Judges from 17 to 21, we don't know when these events happened. We don't know when they happened because we're not given any dates of when they happened. We don't know at what point they're happening, but these two stories are narrated for us, and the purpose of these stories is to show us the state that Israel is in during the book of Judges. So we've been kind of focusing in this book on the political realm of where Israel is at. Now we're going to get down to the nitty-gritty. How are the people on the streets doing? How are the people in Israel doing at this time period? And these stories, I got to tell you guys, they are disturbing. They are really, really disturbing. They might be the most disturbing stories I've ever read in the Bible or otherwise. And I used to study serial killers. And this is worse. This is much worse. The first story is not as bad. And I'm glad that there's mainly girls here today. Because ladies, what you get to hear today is the failure of men. Not a single girl fails in these stories. Not saying that there's not girls who fail in the Bible. There are. But in these stories, the women are doing the right thing and the men are just sucking, like really hard. They're doing a lot of terrible things. So the first story, the beginning of it kind of makes me laugh. Like there's this dude named Micah and his mom, and his mom gets robbed in the beginning of the story of like 1,100 pieces of silver, which would be like, you know, 10,000 bucks back in the day, which is a lot of money. It's a pretty big chunk of change. So her 401k gets cleaned out, and she's like, you know, whoever stole that money, I place a curse on you forever. And her son comes up, and he's like, it was me. My bad. You know, he gives the money back. And the mom was like, oh, man, I'm so happy that my son was honest about robbing me. So she's like so overjoyed. So you see right there, like, where the people are at. That's a victory. That's a win for her. That her son robbed her, but at least he came clean about it, you know. So she feels the need to celebrate that this happened. And so what she does is she takes a portion of the silver and she has an idol made. And she says that this idol is made unto the Lord. So she actually believes that what she's doing is right. It's godly. And we've been talking about this through the book, that one of the major reasons why Israel is this way is because they have lost sight of who God is. They don't know what his character is like anymore. They think he's like an idol at this point. They think he's like a pagan deity. And so they're treating him very wrong. And if you go through these stories, the most shocking thing about these stories is how the people in these stories that are doing these incredibly terrible things are praying throughout it, and they're doing sacrifices throughout it, and they're saying God's name throughout it. Yet, they're not really serving God too well. After that, after this happens, he runs into a Levite. And the Levites were like a priest, so he runs into a pastor walking down the street, and he's like, hey man, like, would you come back to my house and I'll pay you, and you could just be like our family pastor, you know, you could live on our property, we'll pay you some money, we'll give you some food, and you can just hang out with us. And the dude's like, okay. And he walks in and he sees all these idols in his house, and he's like, this is a pretty cool house, you know, and he just serves them. He doesn't see anything wrong with the idolatry. So we see that even the priesthood, even the pastors of the day are just inundated with idolatry. They don't know God anymore, and it's just very tragic. The next chapter, chapter 18, this is where things start ramping up and getting really bad. One of the tribes of Israel, the Danites, they are looking for some quick cash. They're like, man, we're kind of bored. We want some money. So they come together as a tribe and they come up with like a scheme kind of deal. And so what they think of is they're like, you know, we're kind of bored. We want some money. You know what we're going to do? We're going to send scouts out. We're going to send five dudes out of our tribe. And they're going to look for some weak people that we could just kill and take all their stuff. So they send out five dudes. These five dudes run into Micah and his family, and they hang out at their house, and Micah treats them really nice. But all the while, they're looking around the house. They're like, man, you got some nice stuff. This is pretty cool. And he's like, yeah, it is pretty cool. All right. And they're like, yeah, we'll see you later. And so they leave, and then they go to a neighboring city right next to Micah, and they see that this city is peaceful, and they don't really have a whole lot of defenses, but they got a lot of cash. So these scouts come back to Dan, their tribe, and they say, hey, we hit the jackpot, right? There's this city out there. They got, like, no security. We can go in there. We can kill everybody. It's going to be a blast. And there's this dude, bonus, there's this guy right next to the city who has a bunch of idols, and he's got a priest living with him. So let's kidnap the priest, steal his idols, kill all those people, and come back and call it a day. And that's what they do. They go and they completely burn and destroy that entire city. They kill thousands of people, you know, take the women captive, murder all the kids, take all their money, take all their stuff. And as they're leaving, they go to Micah's house and they steal all of his idols. They steal the priest. And it says that the priest was actually happy because they go to the priest and they're like, hey, man, like, what would you rather? Would you rather just serve one guy or a whole city, man? Like, we could pay you way better than this guy. And he's like, shh. Whole city, I'm gone. You know, so he leaves with them. He doesn't care. So you see, the priest is just out for money. He doesn't care about God anymore. As they're leaving, Micah's like, dude, like, you stole my stuff. And they're like, yeah, and we're going to kill you if you complain about it. And he's like, all right. And he goes back home, and that's the end of the story. That's how it ends. Like, so there's no resolution. There's no good guys in this story. And you're like, that's about as bad as it can get. But no, it gets worse. So then a second story is narrated. And this one is... this is the really bad one. This one is the worst story I've ever read. In chapter 19, it says a Levite, who's a priest, a pastor, he goes out and he gets a concubine, which is, it's kind of like a sex slave. It's in that realm where you can treat them as well as you want, but it's a woman that you're able to have relations with that you're not married to. You can just kind of use her as you want, kind of deal. And he goes out and he gets one of these, and she doesn't like hanging out with him because she's like, you're kind of a pig. So she leaves and goes back to her dad's house. He follows her to her dad's house, and he's like, let's go back home. And the dad is kind of a wimp, you know, where he knows that this dude is trouble. He knows this guy is just a bad guy. He's a bad person, and he doesn't want his daughter to go with him. But instead of just saying that to him, he instead comes up with a scheme to try to get the guy to stay forever. So every day when the guy wakes up, he's like, hey, I want to go back home. The dad will be like, why don't you have breakfast with me? And then they eat breakfast and they're hanging out. And he's like, I got to go. And he's like, well, it's almost lunch. Why don't you stay till lunch? And the guy's like, okay. And he stays till lunch. And then after lunch, he's like, well, it's too late to leave now. You might as well stay for dinner. And he stays. He does this to him for like a week. And then after a week, he feeds him breakfast. And then he feeds him lunch. And he's like, stay for dinner. It's too late to leave. He's like, no, I'm leaving, you know, enough of this. So he gets on his donkeys. You know, he gets in his Corvette, he drives off, and it's too late, right? So it's too late in the night, they can't get back to their house, and they end up having to stop in a city. So he's got his concubine, he's got his servants, and he's got all this money and stuff, and he stops at a city called Gibeah, and he can't find a place to stay, he can't find a hotel, so he's like, you know, I'm just going to go into the center of the city, and I'm just going to pass out in, like, the park, basically. I'm gonna sleep in the park, which is not the best idea. And thankfully for him, though, an old man is walking by and he sees him passing out in the park. And he's like, hey, dude, why don't you come back to my house? It's all good. I'll take care of you. And the guy's like, all right. So he goes home with him. Immediately when they get there, a bunch of dudes follow them. So they saw him sleeping in the park. They follow him to this old guy's house and they start banging on the door and they tell the old man, they're like, dude, we saw this guy go in your house. Send him out so that we can rape him, basically. Like, send him out so we could rape him, so we could do what we want. And this old man is like, don't do that. That's really wicked. You know, don't rape this guy. That's a really wicked thing to do. But I got a daughter, and you could rape her. You know, so how are men viewing women at this point? The people of Israel. Are women like really esteemed as being like people? No. Right? So he's like, I got a daughter, you could rape her. And the dude who's staying with him, the Levite, he's like, hey man, don't send out your daughter. That would be bad. But they could have my concubine. So he kicks his concubine out into the wilderness with these dudes, these murderous, rapist guys. And they basically, again, this story is just so bad, right? They rape her to death. Like, no joke. They pass her around, they rape her to death. And the next morning he wakes up, he leaves the house, he sees her on the ground, she's dead. And it says he kicks her and he says, it's time to go, right? So he just doesn't care. He's like, hey, you know, get up, stop being lazy. And she's dead, you know? So he throws her on the back of his donkey. He goes back home. Then he takes a knife. And he cuts her into 12 pieces, and he takes each piece and he mails that piece to a tribe of Israel. I told you this story's messed up. So he mails each piece to a tribe of Israel with a note saying, like, dude, this is what happened to my concubine. We need to get these guys. We need to seek justice of the dudes who did this. And that rallies the people of Israel. And what happens in chapter 20 is the people of Israel then come to this town. And they're like, we need to exact justice against these people that did that. They're like, send out the people who did it, and we're going to exact justice on them. The people inside the town are like, nope, you know, these guys are awesome. We stand by them. And so they send out an army to face the Israelites. So now you got this weird civil war situation happening. And the people of Israel, they're like, okay, God, who do you want us to go out first? And God's like, hey, send Judah. Judah goes out. With his little military, and they get wiped out, right? The evil town beats them. And they're like, God, what the heck gives? They pray again. God's like, hey, go again, see what happens. So they go again, they get beat again. And so they come back, and they're like, God, you know, and they start crying and weeping and fasting, and they're like, God, what do you want us to do? Do you want us to even go? Like, should we go home? And God's like, no, go one more time, and I'm going to give you the victory. And so they go out one more time, and they end up wiping out this military. They kill all the evil men that did it. And you're like, okay, so there's some resolution, right? Some justice happened. But the story keeps going. And they're like, they make this vow, because they're like, man, these people are so wicked. I'll never give any of my daughters to marry their men, because there's only like a couple guys left after this point. Like, I'll never give any of my daughters to marry these men because they're so wicked. But they're like, but we don't want them to die. That would be really cruel. You know, we don't want them to die off. So what are we going to do? So they hatch a plan. They're like, let's go to a town that didn't help us out in this battle. Let's kill all the men and let's find all the young girls, kidnap them, bring them to this town of evil men and force them to marry these guys. And they do it. But they're still like, but there's still not enough girls for the guys. So what are we going to do now? And then in chapter 21, what happens is they're like, there's this festival where these young girls go and they like go to a dance party. It's like this weird girls' night at the club kind of deal. And they all go and they sing and they dance and it's ladies' night. And they're like, okay, what we'll do is we'll hide. And when the ladies go by us, we'll grab them, we'll kidnap them, and we'll force them to marry the remainder of the dudes. And when they do this, the fathers come out and they're like, why are you kidnapping our daughters? Like, what's going on, man? And they're like, hey, we found a loophole. Because we promised that we would never marry our daughters to these guys, but we didn't promise that they couldn't get kidnapped and then marry these guys against their will. And the fathers are like, I didn't think about that. That's a good plan. All right, go ahead and have our daughters. And that's how the story ends. No joke, that is how the story ends. And you're reading this and you're like, what? What is going on? Like, I thought this was the Bible. I thought this was the people of God. I thought they did the right thing. And what you see in these stories is that this is just how bad things have gotten in Israel. And the repeated phrase throughout these two stories is this. It's at the end of the book, verse 25. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And so what I want to pull out of these stories is the problem, what we're seeing in these stories and why it's happening. And then I want to point out the solution very quickly. But those are pretty messed up stories, right? How many of you guys have read those stories before in your own time? Does that encourage you to read the Bible? You're like, whoa, the Bible's awesome, right? that's amazing. I didn't know there was these awesome stories in there. Yeah, they're in there. You know, this is the worst. Like I said, this is the bottom of the barrel. There are similar stories in the book of Numbers that are about as disturbing, but this is the tops. This is horrible what happens in this story. But let's talk about what the problem is. The problem that is happening in Israel is what was described at the end. There is no king in Israel, so everyone does what is right in his own eyes. This is what that means. They were living in a culture and a society where people decided for themselves what was right and what was wrong. People determined for themselves what was right and what was wrong. And this is the major problem with that. When people get to determine for themselves what's right and what's wrong, some people will be relatively okay. And that's what Micah and his family represent. They represent the people in Israel who, even though they're able to do what's right and wrong in their own eyes, what's right and wrong in their own eyes is actually pretty okay, right? They're not doing anything terrible, okay? They're making idols and stuff, and we'll talk about that later, but they're not going out murdering and raping people. But some people, when they do what's right in their own eyes, some really jacked up things seem okay to them that really aren't okay, like murder, rape, things like that. Now, here's a question for you guys. In our culture, do we believe that it's okay to do what's right in your own eyes? Do you think it's relatively okay, accepted in our culture? You basically do what you want to do? Pretty much, right? We have a law, but if you guys go to public school and you start learning philosophy, you'll start learning about these awesome dudes like Nietzsche and people like that that say, hey, you know what? Whatever you do, just do it as you see is right. You know, follow your own morality, follow your own moral compass. You know, there's no one really that could tell you what's right and what's wrong. Only you could determine that for yourself. You must figure it out for your own self. Don't let culture tell you what's right. Don't let religion tell you what's right. You just need to see what's right for you. And they'll even go so far as to say, like, there is no such thing as morality. That's fake. That's not correct. That's something that we have developed as human beings. You just, like, the morality differs from culture to culture, from civilization to civilization, and from people group to people group. So there is no objective morality out there. Okay, do you guys know what objective means? Do you guys know what that means? Objective truth is a truth that's right no matter what. Like 2 plus 2 equals 4. Doesn't matter where you go on Earth. 2 plus 2 still equals 4. If I got in a spaceship and I flew to Pluto, is 2 plus 2 still 4? Yeah, doesn't matter. If I went to somebody in Hungary and I'm like, 2 plus 2 equals 4, and he's like, no, 2 plus 2 equals 5, who's right? I'm right. It doesn't matter what that guy thinks. There's an objective reality, right? 2 plus 2 equals 4, no matter where you go, no matter where you are, no matter who you are, that's correct. You guys get that? Subjective truth is a truth that differs between individuals. Let me give you an example of subjective truth. What if I said chocolate ice cream is the best ice cream there is? Right? Ew. So DJ disagrees with me. Now, if I say it's the best ice cream there is and she says it's not, who's right? Both of us, right? It's subjective. That's not an objective truth. It does differ between people and people. Does that apply to morality, though? Let me give you one moral guideline that you guys might think is objective. I mean, is subjective. Is it wrong to lie? Is that a wrong thing to do? Is it always wrong to lie, though? Okay, so what if your best friend comes to you and she's got a haircut that's not too great, and she goes, "How do I look?" Is it okay to lie to her to help her feelings?
Maybe.
So, okay, so there's some people who says that's objective, and some people say it's subjective. So there's gray areas, is what you're saying. So do you see what I just did there? Now when I ask you that question, is lying always wrong? Some of you are now saying,
it depends,
and some of you are saying, it's always wrong. Do you guys see what happened there?
Yeah.
Okay, let me ask you another question. This is another thing. Let's talk about another sin. How about this? Is it always wrong to have sex before marriage?
Yes.
Okay, some of you say yes. But what if you really love the person and you're dedicated to each other?
Then marry them.
and marry them?
So you guys are still all saying it's objectively wrong no matter what? No matter what, it's always wrong. Okay, some of you are saying no, right? So is it objective or subjective? Some of you say objective, but some of you say subjective. Let me ask you another one. Is it always wrong to abort a baby?
Yes.
Some of you say yes. Okay, what if the mother was raped?
Then
is it still wrong?
For adoption.
Put it up for adoption? Okay, how about this? What if the pregnancy is threatening the life of the mother? So if she continues on in her pregnancy, both the mother and the child will die. Is it still wrong to abort? You still think so? Okay, so still black and white on that one. Very interesting. Is it always wrong to kill somebody?
Yes.
No. See, I was in the Marines, and I went out, and I fought people. Is it wrong for me to kill somebody?
No.
Sometimes it's okay?
It's always wrong.
Yeah?
Okay, I think there's a difference.
That's a good point. So do you guys think that there's a distinction between killing and murdering?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah?
Some of you guys think that? Okay. Now, here's another question. Okay, so Tom brought up an interesting point. He said there's a difference between killing and murdering. Some of you agreed with that, some of you don't. But, okay, so what if there was a person like the Joker who's murdered hundreds and thousands of people, and we decide as a culture, like, we should probably, you know, kill that person. You know, as a court of law, we put him under the court of law. The court judges that he should be put to death, and they give him lethal injection to kill him. Is that murdering him?
No.
No. Do you see the difference? It's killing him, but it's not murdering him. However, if the Joker comes into your house and slits your throat, is that murder?
Yes.
Right. Okay, so there is a difference between murder and killing. But the question is that are they both wrong?
Yes.
All right. Now let me bring up another scenario for you. Okay, so you guys said that it's okay for me as an American to go out and kill people as long as it's defending the country, right?
Yeah.
Okay, what about the German soldiers in World War II? Were they killing to defend their country?
No.
In their eyes
they were, but were they killing or murdering?
Murdering.
You think they were murdering?
Yeah.
Now are you just saying that because they're on the side of wrong? Let me put it in an even more complicated way. How about the Civil War? Okay, the soldiers in the South, were they killing or murdering? You think? Yeah. they think they were? Think that they weren't? What do you think, Hunter?
They didn't know what.
That's right. They thought what they were doing was right. They're defending. Because not every person who fought in the South, right, was like pro-slavery. You guys know that, right? There were some people who fought in the South that they were just like, I don't really like the idea that another military is coming into my home and taking my property. You guys get that? So not everybody who was in the Civil War on the South side was just like, yo, like, slavery's awesome. Yeah, South side. You know, not everybody was doing that. You know, a lot of people were doing it because they were defending their homes and their property and their land. You guys know that, right? And so it is kind of a shaky issue. And so if someone's defending their home, even if they're on the side that supports slavery, is it right for me to shoot them in the face? So is it right for a Union soldier to then kill him? You see how shaky morality can get? You see how difficult it can get when you start really thinking through things?
I think the distinction.
Yeah. And let me throw another little monkey wrench into this. You guys heard about Hiroshima and Nagasaki, right? We dropped two atomic bombs on two cities. Were those military cities? Do you guys know?
No.
They were only civilians in that city. So we killed hundreds of thousands of innocent civilians. But what is the argument? Do you think that was right?
Yeah.
You think it was right? Even though those people were innocent and they're civilians? You don't know? It was to get them to stop. So you could make the argument that I'm preserving more life, right? By killing that amount of people, I'm preserving more people alive, right? You can make that decision. So who are you to make that decision, though? How do you know? Is that still the right thing to do? That's what the U.S. did, but is it right? You don't think so? How about, let me murky the waters even more. You guys heard about when we first came to this country, and the Native American conflict, right? What did we do to the Native Americans? We killed them and brought diseases. Now, you can make the argument of, was that right? Do you think that was the correct thing to do? You don't think so? But couldn't I make the argument that if we don't do this to them, they're going to do it to us? I could, but is it right? How many of you guys feel confused right now? What's right? What's wrong? Would it surprise you to know that in World War II, once we captured all the Nazi generals and the Nazi scientists, we put them on trial? You guys ever heard about that? Called the Nuremberg Trials. And did you know that the Nazi scientists and generals almost went free? That they almost won the case? You know what their lawyers argued? They said, by what standard are you judging us? We were just following the dictates of our country. Right? We didn't decide to do this. We didn't decide to commit genocide or anything like that. We were just following what our government told us to do. Why is it okay for you guys to kick in the door of our nation and tell us what's right and what's wrong? Would you guys like that? Would you guys like it if, let's say, the Taliban came into America and started enforcing Sharia law? Would you like that? No, right? You guys wouldn't like that. So why is it right for America to go into another country and tell them what's right and what's wrong? You know how people won that case? How the Allies won that case? They said there has to be a law above the law. This is what they meant. There must be some sort of a objective moral standard by which we judge all other morality. Do you guys understand what they're saying? And this is my point to you guys. If you take out an objective moral standard, you cannot judge the laws of other people. You cannot judge the laws because you have no standard to judge them by. Do you guys understand that? There's no way for me to look at this story and say what these people did was objectively wrong. I could say I feel wrong about it. It seems wrong to me. But by what standard am I going to say this is objectively wrong when they thought it was right? Who am I to enforce my morality on people that I don't know from a time period that I wasn't in, right, in a culture that I have no idea about? Is that correct to do? No. So this only works, right? Everything that we're discussing and talking about, it only works if there is an objective standard, right? That 2 + 2 = 4 is just as true a statement as rape is always wrong. Do you guys get that? Doesn't matter where you are. Doesn't matter if I go to India. Doesn't matter if I fly to Pluto. It doesn't matter where I am. Rape is always wrong, no matter what. That's an objective statement. But if we evolved from animals, is rape always wrong? Let me ask you a question. Do animals rape? To be honest with you guys, I've watched The Animal Planet. I've had dogs. I've seen birds. I don't think I've ever witnessed a single instance of consensual sex between animals. The girl really doesn't seem to be into it. Every time I see it, you know, I was at my house the other day and I saw this like female bird just sitting on my wall and a male bird just like dive bombed onto her. And I was like, I don't think she's like into that. You know, he finished and like flew away and she's just like, you know, I'm just like, and that was it. That's what happened. And like, I'm not going to look at that. I mean, who am I to look at that and be like, oh my gosh, that bird's a rapist. I'm going to go hunt it down. I'm going to go kill it because I can't allow something like that to live in my society. Right? But if I was looking out my window and I saw a girl walking around the street and I saw a dude do the same thing to her, would I be in my rights to do something about that? Do you think that would be a correct thing for me to do to stop that? Yeah. So we aren't judged by the same morality as animals, are we? Human beings have a higher standard. And the question we got to ask ourselves is, where does the standard come from? Where does it come from? What do Christians say? Where does it come from? It comes from God. We believe in a God. We believe that if there is a law, if there's a moral law, there has to be a moral law giver. It has to exist. There's no way that there could be a moral law out there unless there's a lawgiver. That's how laws exist. It's not like I'm driving down the road and someone says, you can't go over 65 on this freeway. I'll be like, why do you believe that? They'll be like, well, I just think that we evolved to go 65 on this road. That's what I think happened. They'd be like, no, there's a lawgiver who said that 65 is the speed limit. You guys understand that? So when I'm driving with my friends and they're like, hey man, wouldn't it be fun to like find a bunch of girls and like date rape them? I'd be like, I think that's wrong. And they're like, why do you think that's wrong? Well, I think we evolved to think that's wrong. And they're like, well, I don't think it's wrong. Do you see the problem? So now everyone's doing what's right in what? Our own eyes. And so a lot of people will grow up and they'll be like Micah and his family, where they're like, yeah, it's objectively wrong. It's wrong for someone to rape. It's wrong for someone to kill. It's wrong for someone to steal. But other people will grow up and they'll think what? That it is right to do those things. That's a correct way to live. And the only way for morality to exist in a civilization is if there is an objective standard. And an objective standard has to be for everybody. You have to submit to it no matter what. And this is the major problem that our culture has with us as Christians. You know why our culture has a problem with us? They call Christians hypocrites. Why do they call us hypocrites? It's because we follow some dictates from God, but we don't follow others. Do you guys get that? That's a hypocrite. Somebody who says, I believe in objective morality. And they're like, well, why do you like do this stuff with us? Doesn't your Bible tell you not to do that? And you're like, well, that was written for a different time and a different era. And, you know, I'm not going to allow those archaic rules to be moved over to me. I'm not a primitive. You know, I'm not going to live by that. And they're like, well, why is it okay for you to ignore this dictate, but you must follow this other one? Do you see the inconsistencies? Either it's always wrong to do this or it's not. Either it's always wrong to do something or it's not. And by the way, you know, some of those tricky questions that I was asking you guys, one of the most beautiful things about Christianity is that Christianity does not have specific moral laws. Do you guys get that? I'm not going to read in the Bible a place that says, thou shalt not beat your wife. It's not in there. So why don't I beat my wife? Why do I think that that's objectively wrong, even though it's not in the Bible? Because it's not love. You guys get that? That's not a loving thing for me to do. I have an objective standard of how to live and how to treat my wife that comes from who? God and the way he treats his people. So I'm like, I'm not going to do that because God said it's wrong. And even what you said, it's not love. Let me ask you a question. So here you have an instance where the people of Israel are killing a group of people to give another group of people wives. So couldn't they make the argument, well, we're loving this group of people. We're loving the Benjamites by doing this. Are they? Well, they are, but at the neglect of who? The people that they're killing, right? And the women that they're kidnapping. So is it loving for me to love just one person at the expense of others? Probably not, right? So what if, going back to the abortion thing, is it loving for a woman, for me as a husband, to look at my wife who doesn't dig pregnancy? She's like, I'm not ready to have a kid. This is going to really hurt our marriage. This is a financial burden. I can't handle it. I could love my wife by taking that burden off her, but am I loving our baby? No. So is this still right? No. Do you guys see the point? Once you could balance things and understand them through the lens of love, it'll start helping you deal with complex gray issues. So you don't have to always be black and white. Even what Art said about the lying. So was it wrong for the people in that situation to lie? They could be like, no, it's objectively wrong to lie no matter what. So we're going to tell the truth and we're going to die, you know, and that's what we're going to do. They could have done that, but that's stupid. And would I really impose that on, let's say, the Christians living in Iraq or Afghanistan right now? You guys must always tell the truth because it's wrong to lie. And so, man, if people are like, we're going to kill you if you apostatize, if you leave the faith, you must always tell them when you've done that, even though it's going to kill you. Do you see the point? See, these muddy issues start becoming more clear once you understand the lens from which the Bible is spoken to us from. The lens of love, the lens of preservation of life, the lens of caring for other people. It starts helping with these murky issues. But it only works if there's an objective standard. An objective standard is very important because an objective standard means that you follow all, not some. If you only follow some, are you doing what's right in your own eyes, or are you doing what's right before God? My own eyes, right? So if I'm like, I agree with these, but I don't agree with those, so I'm going to do this stuff, but I'm not going to do that stuff, I'm no longer listening to God, I'm still listening to my own heart. Because that means that the stuff I agree with, I'm going to do, and the stuff I don't agree with, I'm not going to do. So who's king in my life? I am. I'm even a judge over the word. Do you guys get that? I'm even above God in my own heart when I do that. And that's why I wanted you guys to think about this story, because everybody in the story is praying to God. You guys understand that? They're all praying to God. And that's why a lot of times when people come to me and they're like, I'm going to pray about that, I'll tell them, you don't need to pray about that. You need to read the word. Like, people come to me and be like, dude, you know what? You know, should I have sex with my girlfriend? I don't know. I'm going to pray about it. They're like, you don't need to pray about it. You need to read the Bible, right? You need to see what God said. And I always say this to my Mormon friends. I've talked to a lot of Mormons over the years. And, you know, I'll show them from the Bible that what they're saying is objectively wrong. And they'll be like, well, you need to pray about that. I'm like, okay, well, if I prayed about it and God told me, like, yeah, I know in the Bible this contradicts, but do it anyway. Now I have to believe in a God who can't make up his own mind, right? A God who, like, flip-flops and is weird. Do you want to believe in that kind of God? No. Do you guys see the importance of having an objective standard? Otherwise, what are you left with? What's right in your own eyes? So I think you guys, I don't think I have to really go into the people that are doing really messed up stuff, right? I don't think I have to really explain to you guys why rape is wrong and why murder is wrong. Do I have to? Do any of you guys, like, iffy on those issues? They're like, well, I don't know, Peter. You know, there could be some times where murdering a town is okay. You know, like, that could be all right. Any of you in that? Okay, good. Yeah, Anakin. Sand people. No. Freaking Hayden Christensen. Anyway, so when you go into the religious people, though, this is the really interesting thing. Let me talk about the hypocrisy that happens in religious people because of this. Number one, religious people, when they do their right deeds, if you're not submitting to God, it is impossible for you not to become puffed up and feel better than other people. Do you guys understand that? Because when I look at the world, it's very easy for me to be like, this world and their drugs and their alcohol and their rap music and their baggy pants, you know, they're just so sinful, man. But not me. I don't do that stuff. Because I'm not actually what? I'm not actually submitting to God. I'm just submitting to what I think is right. And so it's very easy for me to become puffed up and feel better than everybody around me because of what I'm doing. If you ever feel a pride or arrogance rise up in you, and you ever feel like you're better than another person because of what you do morally, that comes from you not submitting to God. Because if I'm submitting to God, am I really better than anyone else? Am I? No. I'm not better than anyone else. I have evil dictates that go other ways, right? I have evil in my heart that wants to go other ways, but I'm submitting to God. I'm trying to do what God says. I'm no better than anybody else. It's not my moral standard. It's whose? It's God's moral standard. It's what he says is right and what is wrong. I can't feel better about anybody if I understand this. I mean, how could I? Right? Am I really better than you because I know the Bible and you don't? Or because God gave me the grace to submit to the Word of God as opposed to you? Like, am I really better than you? No, right? So all judgment and pride starts leaking out of your life if you understand this. The other thing that's going to happen to you is you're going to start making those moral compromises, where the things that you feel is really important, you're going to elevate, and the things that you can't do, you're going to diminish. Isn't it weird in church that people are like, I feel like the number one sin in church is like cussing. Like, people are like, dude, don't do it. You know, don't cuss. Like, we're very severe on that. Like, if I was hanging around church circles and I cussed at somebody, people would be like, oh my gosh, you know, that dude, oh man, he needs Jesus. You know, that man needs Jesus. He said the F word, you know, and like, that's like the number one sin. And yet, like, when people are in their own lives and they're lying and they're having sex before marriage and they're doing these things, they're like, well, that's not a big deal. But the cussing, man, that needs to stop, all right? That's the issue right here, okay? We need to really focus in on that. And you guys see what happens when, you guys probably know, because most of you grew up in Christian homes, you guys see the hypocrisy, don't you? Where, like, you're doing certain things that your parents are like, you shouldn't do that. But then you look at their lives, and what do you see?
The stuff that they do,
right? And you're like, well, why are you telling me to work on this when you don't work on that? It's like, yeah, you see your dad like cheating on his taxes, but oh, my language needs to clean up. I see my dad like getting a buzz on beer all the time, but oh, I shouldn't smoke cigarettes. Do you guys see the point? You see where that hypocrisy comes from and why it breeds hatred and animosity? Because what do you see in your parents? Are they submitting to God? No, they're submitting to what they think is right. So only when, do you guys see the point? The only way it's going to happen is, would it change if, let me ask you this question. Would you feel like someone is hypocritical if they're like, Hunter, you need to work on your language? And you're like, Peter, I see you lie all the time. And I was like, you know what, you're right, man. I need to work on that. That's wrong. You're correct. I'm wrong when I do that. I need to work on that. What am I showing you when I say that?
That you're trying.
That I'm trying. That I see your point. That you're right. There is a law that I'm failing. And we both need to work on it. You know what that does? It puts me on your level. But if you say that to me and I'm like, no, the cussing is really the problem. What I'm doing is not a big deal. Okay, you need to work on yourself, mister. You see? Now I'm higher than you. I'm looking down on you and I'm judging you. Instead of both of us being judged by the word of God, I'm judging you. And that leads to hypocrisy and it leads to anger and it leads to sin. So that's something that I just want you guys to think about in your own life. I want you to be aware of the hypocrisy in the church and where it comes from. It comes from people not submitting to the full word of God. And I want you to understand why the world is the way that it is. I can't look at the world and judge it. I can't even, you know what? That was something that really hit me when I went over to Afghanistan, because I wanted to hate the people. I wanted to hate the people. And I went over there, you know what I found out? I don't hate them. They're just people. And they're trying to do what's right. But you know what the problem is? The problem isn't what they're doing. The problem is what they think is what? What they think is right. That's what needs to change. The people are good. It's what they're listening to that's wrong. Do you guys understand that? And until we change that, until we change the objective standard of morality, we haven't changed anything. You haven't changed anything. So that's why I really disagree with Christians trying to argue with secularists on their own turf. They're like, dude, you know, abortion's wrong. Why is it wrong? Well, let me give you the medical reasons, bro. And they go through it. It's like, yeah, that's great. I'm not against that, per se. But at the end of the day, the real issue is what moral standard I have. Right? That's the real issue. My objective morality says a person is a person no matter what. That when a woman becomes pregnant, when conception happens, that is a human being inside of her. And because it's a human being made in the image, likeness of God, it has dignity and rights and should be protected. From their perspective, though, what's a human being? What's a human being? Just an evolved primate, right? Nobody freaks out when a bunch of cows get slaughtered, do they? When you guys are eating a burger, you're like, what a sinner. Oh my gosh, this cow gave his life for me. And you're like crying and you're eating it. You're like, oh my gosh, that was so good. He had to die for me. You know, this cow gave his life for my hunger. You know, and you're just weeping. No one thinks that way. Because we know that cows don't have the same value and dignity as who? Humans. Because we have a standard that says that. Atheists don't have that standard. They could easily say, no, what has rights is someone with intelligence. The fetus has no intelligence. That's why we don't care about killing cows, and that's why we don't care about killing fetuses. Because neither one has what? Intelligence, agency. They don't have rights. You guys get the point? So what needs to change? It's their moral standard. That's what needs to change. If I'm arguing with an atheist about you shouldn't have sex before marriage, and they're like, why? STDs, you know, and this and that and blah, 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 blah. You know what they'll say to me? That's why I wear what? Condoms, dude. Safe sex, idiot. You know, and that's what they're going to say to me. Be like, no, it's wrong, you know. Well, until their moral standard changes, is it wrong? No, it's not wrong. So we need to change people's moral standard. If the moral standard doesn't change, you have done nothing. And that's why the last verse is so important. What was the issue in Israel? There was no what? King in Israel. Now let me give you guys a little spoiler. We'll probably go into this later. But when you read about the kings of Israel, did they fix the problem? No. So is this author like, here's the problem, this is why our country sucks, we need a king? No, when you get to the kings, they're just as bad as everyone else. They suck. They're terrible, right? That's why they went into captivity. This is what the writer of Judges is really saying. He was looking forward to an ultimate king that would make things right. He was looking forward to somebody who was going to come, who was going to look at the world and say, this is what's right. And they weren't just going to say it, they were going to live it. Because doesn't that piss you off when someone tells you to do something, to do something different? Hey, don't lie. And then you see them lie like a second later. You're like, oh gosh, you know, like I hate you. We needed somebody to come down and say, this is the right way to live, and then to actually live it. You guys understand that? Who was the person that did that? Jesus. He was the king that the writer of Judges was looking to. And when he becomes the king of my life, and I submit to him as my king, then my life becomes like his over time. Because not only was he the king that gave me the right standard, but he took the punishment for when we do the wrong thing. Right? He died in my place. And that's how he established justice on the earth. So the more we study that and the more we grow in that, the better we become as people, the more we grow. But we will never be perfect. It's wrong for me to look down my nose at anyone because there's sin in my life. Right? There are things that Jesus tells me to do that, guess what? I don't do. But I don't stay that way. I don't look at those things and say, I know Jesus told me to do that, but I don't really care because I'm not doing it. You know, I'm convicted. I feel bad when I lust in my heart. I feel bad when I lie. I feel bad when I get angry at people because I know it's wrong and I'm trying to work on it. Right? So I hope you guys don't look at me and think that I've got it together because I really don't. But nobody does. I'm on the same path as you guys. Same exact path, same exact journey. And Jesus is helping all of us. Let's pray. And then if you guys have questions, I know it's a pretty awesome section, right? Yeah, but let's, you guys can ask them if you want. Dear God, I want to thank you for your word. I pray that we would learn to see you as our King, Lord, that you are not just our Savior, not just the one who died for our sins, but you're the one that shows us a better way to live. Help us to live like you did. Give us the strength and the grace to abide in you. And in your name, amen.